All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a warrant officer helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to our program today. I am very excited to have you on. It's all about a lot of entrepreneurs. And so we're going to be talking with a Brigadier General, John Calavi. And he has written a book titled No Soldier Left Behind. It's a really cool story. I'm anxious to talk to him on the air about his experiences, not only in the military, but afterwards, because he's heavily involved in charity events and all kinds of different support things for veterans. I think hence the title, No Soldier Left Behind. It's a great read. We also have toward the end of the program, we're going to be talking with another group from the Heritage Distilling Company, and this is going to be Drew and Sarah Kellerman's story of their involvement with that. They have just come out with a new War Dogs edition of their whiskey, I guess you could say. And so we're going to be talking about them and how they got started in that business. And we're also going to be welcoming a new sponsor today, and the new sponsor is PuroClean. And PuroClean is a company, a leader in the property emergency services, helps families and businesses overcome the devastating setbacks caused by water, fire, mold, and other conditions. They are known as the paramedics of property damage. They provide water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold removal, and biohazard cleanup. So we're really happy to have them here. They also have a very special program of a franchises for veterans, in which they offer a 25% off their normal franchise fee. And my partner Jim Falzone sent me a pre-recorded interview that he did with one of their franchisees that we will be playing later on during the program. So again, this is one of their statements from their website is PuroClean is one of the nation's leading restoration franchise networks and is made up of entrepreneurs just like you. And the number, if you're interested in finding out more information, is 800-351-2282. That's 800-351-2282, or you can go to puroclean.com, PuroClean.com. Wow. Well, we're real happy to have another sponsor. It always helps us out as we want to try to expand our world of affiliate stations out there. It always helps to have sponsors to help us do that. While I'm talking about sponsors, I better get into our regular sponsors. So first of all, we have Legal Help for Veterans, specializing in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. The Vietnam Veterans of America. Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, go to their website, vva.org. Locally, the Irwin Press Corps and American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, if you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Thanks in advance for your support. Now, let's get right into the program. So joining me right now by the magic technology of phone is Brigadier General John G. Calavi. John is from Michigan, and we'll talk about that a little bit as we get in there. But he and his co-author, I've got Dr. Donald Steele is the co-author of the book, No Soldier Left Behind. So let's give a Veterans Radio welcome to John Calavi. Hi, John.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's really great to to get you on the program after reading your book. I figured I had to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
And let me tell you the reason. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. I was just finishing up reviewing, you know, your book a little bit ago, and I saw that you were in charge of academics at Fort Walters, Texas.
Yes, I was. That was my assignment after Vietnam.
When were you there?
I was in Vietnam from January 67 to January 68, and then I went to Fort Walters, and I stayed there until the end of August 69.
You must have been my academic leader, because I was at Fort Walters almost all of 1968.
Possibly. That would be great.
I was a red hat, a big red one, you know? You're going to be one.
Oh, yeah, I was a gold hat.
Okay. So for our audience, when you went to Fort Walters for the Army Primary Flight School, they had, I think it was nine companies, something like that, and each company had a different colored hat. So that's where these colors all come in. So let me go back to the beginning, John, and ask you, so you're originally from Michigan. Tell me a little bit about your early life here in the state.
I grew up in a small town in the northeast side of the state. I went to Whittemore Prescott High School. It was a consolidated school district of three towns, Whittemore, Prescott, and Skidway Lake. I was from Skidway Lake. That was considered the wrong side of the tracks, but I loved it.
Well, it sounded really like you had a very interesting childhood.
Yeah, interesting would be an understatement. I guess so, yeah. My father left when I was 15, so I was the oldest of four children. And my mother and the four kids lived in a one-room cabin. We had virtually nothing, but we all did fine.
Well, you know, and you weren't the biggest person in the world. And at your high school, you were talking about that you tried, you know, you played on all sports.
Well, I went to school at West Branch through the ninth grade. And then my sophomore year, they changed districts. I was going to go to Whittemore Prescott. I didn't know any students from Whittemore Prescott, but the two things I did know, they had very good athletes and they had good sports teams. So I decided if I was to be accepted by my new classmates, I'd become an athlete. The first thing I did was try out for the football team. I made the team. But in all candor, everyone that tried out for it made it. We never had more than 15 players. And at one time, we were down to 12 because of injuries. If we'd lost a couple more, we had to pull somebody out of the band. Now, talking about the band, I was also in a marching band. So at halftime of the game, I'd go to the locker room, take off my football uniform, put on my band uniform, go out and perform, change clothes, and go back, play the last half of the game. We had four clarinet players in the band. I was fourth chair. I know what you're thinking. Fourth out of four is not very good. But let me tell you the good part. No one, I mean no one, ever challenged me for my chair. The next thing I did was went off for junior varsity basketball. I was the shortest guy on the team. It didn't take me long to conclude basketball wasn't my sport. The only time the coach put me in a game was if we were ahead by more than 20 points with less than 2 minutes to go. I played 3.5 minutes the entire season. Next game, baseball. Coach Fagan had a motto, "A Kohavi pitches, everybody hits." Last but not least was my favorite sport, track. Once again, I was the shortest guy on the team. And as infinite wisdom, Coach Dudo made me a hurdler. He may as well made me a pole vaulter. That's the only way I was going to get over those hurdles. But I enjoyed all of them.
Well, I know. It just cracks me up because my son is, it's hard to believe now, is a retired band director. And he was at a small school here in Southeast Michigan. And he would have football players that would go out and, you know, run with the marching band as well, and then go back and continue playing the game. So that's
Yeah, you play offense and defense. I was left halfback on offense, and I played safety on defense. But I loved being part of the team.
Well, sure, that was the whole thing. I mean, remember, I did the similar thing. I was an end on offense, and I was a safety on defense. And you just played the whole game, and I loved, and probably you did too. I just loved running into people.
Well, if you were an Ed, you were much taller than me. I used to be 5'7". I'm shrinking. I'm now 5'6". At the rate I'm going 3 or 4 years from now, I may be a dwarf.
Well, I hope not, because I'm starting at 6'2", and I'm afraid of where I might end up with that story. We are talking here with retired Brigadier General John Colhavy. His book is titled No Soldier Left Behind, and I should get to that right now. So why the title, John? Why No Soldier Left Behind?
I was a huge believer in that, and I flew many combat missions where we went in to extract soldiers, and in a couple of cases where they're out of ammo, it's down to knives and bayonets, they're killing each other, and we landed right in the middle to pull them out. I was always a believer you could never direct a soldier to go on a patrol or on a combat mission knowing if he were captured, no attempt would be made to retrieve him. So we made every attempt. I think if you read the book, of all the missions I flew, and I flew over 300 combat missions, as I'm sure you did too, I was the lead helicopter of 50 Hueys. We flew into Cambodia in the middle of the night. We had an agent report. There were 5 captured Americans. We found the remaining members of their patrol. They're all shot in the head. So we determined that they tried to surrender, and they killed all but 5. They took them captive, and we retrieved them. We got them out of a village in Cambodia, and we flew back into South Vietnam. That was my very favorite mission. We accomplished what we were out to do.
Well, I can certainly understand, John, what you were talking about. And it was something I think maybe all of us learned during our time in the service, that you never, ever left anybody out in the field. And, and reading your description of your experiences in Vietnam is very similar. The company I was with was a 195th Assault Helicopter Company, and we flew camouflaged aircraft, as a matter of fact, with no identification, no numbers on the aircraft, and no identification on us. And so we went into Cambodia before it was, popular and official. And up north of Tay Ninh. And I know you were in Cu Chi, which was in Three Corps, which is where I was.
Tay Ninh was in our area of operations, and I often stayed at Tay Ninh because we pulled counter mortar. We picked up sit reps in the middle of the night from artillery outposts. We retrieved wounded soldiers. We brought bodies back. I mean, we did everything we were asked to do, and we accomplished it to the best of our ability.
Well, that's what they say about Army aviators, above the best. That was our job.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so you survived Vietnam. I want to go back just a little bit, though, back to your college experiences over at Central Michigan.
Yep.
Can you tell nobody.
My father agreed to pay for my first semester's tuition, room and board, books, spending money. I was on my own. And then after the first semester, I was 100% on my own. I worked a minimum of 3 jobs all the way through college. And at one time, I actually had 5 different jobs. But I was able to do it. I believe anybody who wants to get through college can do it if they want to pay the price. And the price is hard work and additional effort.
Absolutely. I can relate to that. Before I was in the Army, I didn't have a very good experience college-wise. But as soon as I was out, I went back and finished up the bachelor's, master's in 3 years. All you got to do is go to class, go to class and do the work. It's not that hard.
That's right. Yep. The jobs were there if you wanted them. I did everything. I worked as a butcher at a supermarket. And then when the supermarket closed that night, I had to clean all the meat cutting machines, which, as you know, is a kind of a nasty job. I worked at a fast food restaurant on Sunday afternoons. I drove or hitchhiked, depending on whether or not I had a car, to a grocery store that I grew up in northern Michigan. I worked there Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, go back to Mount Pleasant. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think it made me appreciate more later in life.
I agree. And in reading the stories of your experiences at Central Michigan. It sounded similar to a lot of people who went to college, unfortunately, in the 60s, sometimes at Animal House. The movie was the life story of, you know, the fraternity, whatever fraternity you were involved in.
When I saw that movie, I thought they patterned it after my fraternity, Phi Sigma Epsilon. And actually, we had a reunion 2 weeks ago prior to homecoming. All the guys are over 80, but they're still above ground and moving and pretty sharp.
That's the great part. when everybody's above ground, that's good. That is terrific. I wanted you, you know, this is kind of a biography, autobiography. Tell me about your relationship with Don Steele, Donald Steele.
Don and I were fraternity brothers in college, and actually we were roommates for a period of time. We lived in the country upstairs in an older house, and the elderly couple lived downstairs, and four of us lived upstairs. And Don was a very accomplished musician. He kind of worked his way through college playing. He had a band. All the guys that lived there were in the band except me. And they would perform 3-4 nights a week at bars around Mount Pleasant, and they made enough money, he got through it. He is a very talented man. We got to be good friends. And then we lost track of each other. Many years later, Don became one of the premier motivational speakers in the country. He was under contract to the company I worked for, Merrill Lynch. When he came to our office, it was mandatory attendance, and that's how we kind of reacquainted ourselves with each other. At one of the times he came to our building, and we've gotten to be very close friends since then.
Well, I'm sorry he wasn't able to join us on for this. We would have gotten some more inside stories on your real behavior at Central Michigan, probably. But to move along from there, one of the great things I really enjoyed about the book, John, which is the book is No Soldier Left Behind. It's available everywhere if you wanted it. It was your use of songs from the era, and I wish I'd had time to put together a mixtape or something of the music that you have in here. But you've got John Prine in here, you've got Clarence Clearwater, you've got everything in here, and it was a really great up. It was fun just reading your book.
That really was Don's idea. Don's a very accomplished singer and musician. He cut an album many years ago with Willie Nelson, one with Tammy Wynette. And two of his own albums have come out in the last 2 years, and they're both very, very good, and I enjoy listening to them on a regular basis.
I have to go listen to them. I just opened the book to a page where he uses the song Crazy as a Loon by John Prine.
That's one of the songs.
And, you know, many people regarded helicopter pilots especially as being crazy as a loon and many other things that they call us.
I had never seen a helicopter before, and I was very inquisitive. My first day of flight school, I asked the instructor, I said, what do you do if the engine quits? He said, you auto-rotate. I said, what exactly is that? He said, the power, the collective, that's in your left hand. You immediately lower that. There's a centrifugal clutch. The transmission releases the blade. The blade becomes freewheeling. And as long as you maintain your rotor RPM, you guide the aircraft down. And I said, what do you do if the rotor quits? He said, very simple. You immediately go into the helicopter pilot's emergency position. And I said, what exactly is that? You spread your legs better than kiss your ass goodbye. I never forgot that.
The memories of those instructor pilots. I don't know how they put up with
us. That was written by Chris Christopherson. Chris Christopherson was a Huey pilot, as you know.
Right.
He flew out of Coochie, my base camp. I was on one side with the 25th Infantry. He was on the other side of the airstrip with the 116th Hornets. And he wrote a song about his flight instructor called Sky King. It's
yes.
Hilarious. Have Don send you the album.
I'm not being very professional today.
Yeah, you are. You're having fun. That's what counts.
That's exactly it. I hated Coochie. Every time I flew past Coochie, some guy from the rubber plantation would take a pot shot at us and we couldn't shoot back at him.
You know, we flew, as you know, we were authorized 52 pilots. We never had more than 46. We were always short pilots, and we were flying ungodly hours. And almost every night when we'd fly, come in, they'd shoot at us from the village of Kouchi. We could not return fire because they had a pacification program going on. And with that thing, these guys are shooting us night after night, and we can't do anything about it. Somehow we have to retaliate. So we came up with a brilliant idea. As you know, there's a lot of monkeys in Vietnam. We got a monkey. We put a collar on, a long rope, taunted him with a stick. Made this monkey so mean, everybody that walked by, he wanted to jump on and bite you. Anyway, well, we thought he was good and mean. We took a parachute from the flares you drop to illuminate the battlefield. We took the lanyard, the ropes to connect it, and we rigged it easy to get out of harness. We put the monkey in harness. We pushed him out broad daylight over the village. Now, this monkey is very inquisitive. Halfway down, he climbs up the lanyard, the ropes, got atop the parachute. Needless to say, it collapsed. He went down like a bag of concrete. We got a second monkey. That one was even meaner than the first one. Well, we thought he was good and ready. We dropped him over the village. Now, the 25th Division, about every two and a half weeks, published a newsletter about all the operations going on within our area of operations. Right. Front page, rabid monkey bites six villagers. Yay, we got back at those SOBs. That's the kind of stuff we did for laughs, as you're aware.
No, I understand it. I mean, you're sending 19 to 22, 23-year-old boys over there, you know, and they're going to think of ways to solve their problems, which is, you know, retaliation. I still won't buy Michelin rubber tires again, you know. My son says I have to get over it. I can't.
I was very fortunate. 3.5 months after I arrived in country, the primary flight leader rotated. It was a major, and the company commander made me the primary flight leader. So I got to pick every crew. I'm talking about the aircraft commanders, the pilots, the crew chiefs, and gunners, every day before all the combat missions we flew. And if it were a full suppression mission where you're going in guns blazing, coming out guns blazing, the guys that I didn't pick were upset. They loved the action, and I love that about them. They risked their lives every day of the week, but they loved the excitement of it. I mean, I depended on them to do their job like they depended on me to fly the aircraft, and we had great relationships.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I can never praise my crew chief enough for keeping me alive.
I had a reunion in Florida last winter with my former crew chief and my favorite gunner. Tony Lassery is my gunner. Bob Masterson was my crew chief. And we got together for 3 or 4 days. There was a great reunion. Johnny said, I saved your ass on many occasions. I said, yes, you did. Because of me, you never had to walk home. So we have a great relationship. He wrote a book called Highest Traditions. And I'm in that book, I think, 5 times.
Okay, I'm about to check that one out. We're talking here with retired Brigadier General John Kohlhaave. And his book is titled No Soldier Left Behind, which is, you know, for anybody who's been in the military and whatever branch it is, you never leave anybody behind. So when you got out of the service, shortly after you got home from Vietnam and you did your tour at Fort Walters, which is probably almost worse probably than Vietnam.
No, I really enjoyed it. I loved the people of Texas. They were very friendly. I got to be friends with a lot of locals, and I thoroughly enjoyed that assignment. I enjoyed every assignment I had. The worst one I had was the division that I was in the reserve was chosen for inactivation in the early years of the Clinton administration. I spent the last 2 years going around the states of Michigan and Indiana doing closing ceremonies on units or in some cases on third-generation family members. That was my worst assignment. That was very sad.
I'm sure I can certainly relate to that. So my point was, I was going to say that when you and your wife at the time decided that you would take a year off to decide if you wanted to stay, you know, go back to civilian world eventually go back in the Army, and you ended up with Merrill Lynch. Can you talk us about that a little bit?
Well, you know, my last assignment at Fort Walters, I was the senior captain in the academic division. We had a major, and sometimes he was there. And my first day there, he said, "John, you're capable of running it. I'm capable of running it. We both don't have to be here every day." So we basically took turns running the academic unit. I had 27 captains that reported to me, but by virtue of time and grade, I was the ranking one. At the end of the month, I had the most responsibility, put in the most time, and we all got the same pay. So I decided when I was going to leave active duty, I'd like to find a job that would reward me for my effort and my ability rather than those of the masses. I turned down multiple offers from General Motors because that didn't fit that criteria. Great company, but it wasn't what I was looking for. I didn't know much about the brokerage business other than what I learned from a couple of my instructors at Fort Walters, and it sounded interesting to me. I sent letters to 5 Merrill Lynch offices. 4 of them said thanks, but no thanks. The 5th one said, we'd like to have you in for an interview. And in the early years of the war, if you flew in uniform, you got a discounted airfare. Later, right, they told you not to because you'd be harassed. Well, mm-hmm, this was before that. So I flew from Texas to Detroit, Michigan. My flight was late arriving. I was in khaki uniform. I was going to go to my mother's house, put a suit on, and go in. I had a preliminary interview. And I was to take 2 tests, one on aptitude and one on intelligence. The flight was late. I told my brother, take me straight to the Merrill Lynch office. I don't want to be late. The manager of the office was a former naval officer. I think he recognized some of the ribbons, and I believe that's what got me the job. I didn't have any of the traits or experiences they were looking for. I had no background other than working in a grocery store in finance, banking, anything to do with that, even sales. But he gave me an opportunity, and that's all I was looking for. And I had a wonderful career. 5 months after leaving active duty, I was recruited to come in the Army Reserve and Infantry Training Division, headquartered in Livonia, Michigan, and form an aviation unit. They were authorized one, but they didn't have a pilot. So I fit the bill, and I spent the next year and a half, writing letters to the world, getting on alert hangar at Selfridge Air National Guard Base, recruiting pilots, crew chiefs, mechanics, and I had a hangar full of aircraft. Anything can be done if you try hard enough. I got aircraft, Hillers OH-23s, from the boneyard in Arizona. I got rebuilt Hueys from the rebuilt facility in Corpus Christi, Texas. I got a fixed-wing twin-engine Beech Baron from the California Department of Natural Resources. It was all orange. Naturally, we repainted it. I got aircraft from the customs that were confiscated in Florida. The only problem with those, most of that salt corrosion. But we had a hangar full of aircraft. We got the job done. It was challenging, but it was interesting. And after Vietnam, buddies of mine have stayed on board were flying 30, 40 hours a year. I was flying 200 to 300 hours a year in the reserve. The funds that they took from the active component, the reserve were able to get them. And the air section I was in charge of, I take great pride in saying we won the 5th Army Aviation Award, I don't remember, 5 or 6 years in a row, the best aviation company in the country. And it mainly because all of the guys were Vietnam veterans, all but 2 had over 1,000 hours combat time, half were dual rated, several were instructor qualified, all of us became instructor rated. It was a pleasure to fly with these guys. They were good. They were pros.
Wow, I wish I'd run into you about 50 years ago.
Me too.
That would have been great. One regret is that when the last time I landed at Karnes Army Airfield at Fort Rucker, Alabama, I said, I'm done. I just felt like I'd pushed that envelope, you know, far enough at that time. But I wanted to find out what you're up to right now, because I know that you've retired. I think you've retired from Merrill Lynch, according to your book. What is it that you're doing now, and how does the No Soldier Left Behind come into play again?
The reason for the book, Don Steele said, of all the people I've known in my life, you have by far the most interesting background. I'd like to write a book about you. The biggest reason I did it, my wife and I combined have 15 grandchildren. None of them know anything about my background, and only one has ever even asked me about it. So I wrote the book. If my grandkids want to know more about me, I'll give a copy of the book, and they can read it. But I was very fortunate. I had a great career at Merrill Lynch. I had a great career in the Army, and I've always maintained the statement, I have been blessed, and I really believe that. I'm a very positive person.
You certainly sound like it. I look forward to, I'd like to, you know, look forward to meeting you in person since I noticed that you have a Michigan phone number. Maybe we can arrange that.
Yeah, I live in White Lake Township.
Okay.
White Lake Township is between Waterford and Heartland, not far from Brighton, very close to Milford. It's a small community. I've been there 53 years. I'll die there. And I also take great pride in saying I've been the president of the White Lake Township Civil Service Board. This is my 46th year. So I do the testing and the interviews for the police and fire department, promotion boards, grievance hearings, and so on. That's my contribution to my community.
Well, you're doing a great job, John, and I want to thank you so much for being on Veterans Radio. The book is No Soldier Left Behind. I strongly encourage, especially our Vietnam-era veterans out there listening, to check this out. If you were listening earlier on, you got me laughing. There's some stuff in here that will just crack you up, in addition to the serious stories. So, John, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I'm looking forward to meeting you and hopefully having you on again in the future.
You have my number. Call me anytime. I'll drive to wherever you're at. I retired from Merrill Lynch at the end of 2017, but I own a number of businesses, and that's been – I don't golf, but I own 3 golf courses. Someday I'll tell you my theory why I start buying golf courses. But I would love to have the opportunity to meet you personally. You have my number. Call me. You're available. We'll make it happen.
Okay, John, thank you very, very much for being on the program today. Again, the book, No Soldier Left Behind, it's available everywhere. I encourage all of you to read this. It's very enlightening, and it's also very uplifting, and it's very motivational, too. So,
I just close by saying, when I think of that Afghanistan debacle and the way we left there, that saddens me. It actually sickens me. That would have never happened in our era, in our day. It just wouldn't have happened. And it saddens me that we left so many good people behind. But anyway, we'll move on. Thank you
we'll
so much
on.
For it's been an honor, a pleasure, and I look forward to meeting you personally at your convenience. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. As I mentioned earlier on at the beginning of the program that we have a new sponsor, PuroClean, and my partner, Jim Falsone, interviewed Jesse Wines, who is one of the franchisees for PuroClean. So we're going to play that interview, and then after the interview, we'll play our Medal of Honor segment, and then we will come back and we will join where did they go? Drew and Sarah Kellerman from the Heritage Distilling Company. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back live again in about 7 or 8 minutes. All right. You are listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio Spotlight on PuroClean and its franchisees. PuroClean's a leader in property emergency services, helping families and businesses overcome the devastating setbacks caused by water, fire, mold, and other conditions that result in property damage. It's independently owned by franchisees that do the real work in their communities. PuroClean is known as the paramedics of property damage. It provides water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, biohazard cleanup on commercial and residential customers. PuroClean.com is where you can check this out. And by the way, there's a veterans discount on the franchise. But today we get to talk to two business owners, Jesse and Jennifer Wine. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to talk a little later about your time in the Wisconsin National Guard. Jesse, you served, I think it was 8 years, came out as a sergeant. Jennifer, I think you had a 12-year career in the Army National Guard, and we want to talk about those experiences. But here we're talking to you specifically because you are business owners. You have a franchise with PuroClean. Why did you settle on a business with PuroClean? And Jennifer, I'm going to toss that one to you.
Sure. So we decided to go in because we were looking for a franchise that kind of exhibited like all of our values. And when we settled on PuroClean, we had gone to the Meet the Team Day. And when we walked into the front office for the first time, they had brought all of the employees out to greet us. So we got to meet everybody from the top down, and we were accepted as if we were already family members. And that experience is very similar to the experience you have as a military member. No matter where you are, where you come from, if you're in the service, Marines, National Guard, Army, Navy, it doesn't matter who you are. You walk into a room with prior service veterans and you are instantly family. And that is the connection that I felt the moment I walked into PuroClean. And from that point, there was no other choice. This was the only place for us.
Well, and I should mention that Steve White, the chief operating officer of PuroClean, is an Army vet, served in the U.S. Army, was a captain. So he probably had some of those same values and experiences that, and wanted to make sure that you felt them as well. So it's good to hear that you did, Jennifer.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that gets us to another question, and I'll toss this, Jesse, your way, which is, what's the best part of owning your own business?
It's a great question. Obviously, being able to call the shots is important. Being able to expand my business in the way I want to grow it, to how I want to grow it is very important to us as, new business owners. And what's great about that is PuroClean Corporate, they don't stand in our way. They support us and encourage us. You have some bumpers, some guide rails, but it's for your own good. It's really great. I enjoy helping people. It's a very satisfying job to go in and help people with, their homes, some of their biggest purchase they're ever going to make, and we come in and when it's destroyed and we rebuild it. And, it's just a very fulfilling job, it's just a great part of, what I want to do, in my life to help people.
Well, Jesse, you have a long history in construction. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But one of the things franchises have are sort of standard operating procedures. And you're meeting people on the worst day of their life. They've had a flood, they've had a water break, they've had a fire, and you've got a process. Explain how standard operating procedures, not unlike in the Army, kind of help you go through and fix the worst day of somebody's life.
Sure, yeah. You wear a lot of hats. So your SOPs, we keep them in the trucks. Hey, we're dealing with this situation. You got to follow the steps. It's important because a lot of people don't do this every day. We can look at a situation and know exactly how it's going to end at, 2 months from now, but the homeowners have no idea. And so we're there to educate, to help, sometimes a shoulder to cry on, having guidelines in place, your SOPs, it helps when you have employees. It allows the experienced guys to have a resource. It's like your Dash 10 and your Humvees. Where do you go if you need something? So,
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about one other thing. Is you mentioned you like helping people, but you get to do it in your community in Wisconsin. Talk a little bit about how that's the most certainly a satisfying part of the business.
Yeah, I don't know, Jim. Okay, I'll take it. Well, why did we join the Army? We wanted to help. We wanted to serve. We joined the National Guard. We helped people in our own communities through disasters. And I've been deployed on multiple scenarios and fields of operation. But nothing beats helping your neighbors. It's a very satisfying feeling.
Well, let's point people to, if they're interested, you can go to puroclean.com, read more about what this business opportunity looks like. As I mentioned earlier, they have a veterans discount on being able to get in. So it's puroclean.com.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Navy Captain John Cromwell gave his life to preserve the security of his mission. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Cromwell was aboard the USS Sculpin during the 9th War Patrol of that vessel in enemy-controlled waters off Truk Island. Undertaking this patrol prior to the launching of our first large-scale offensive in the Pacific, Captain Cromwell possessed secret intelligence information of our submarine strategy and tactics, scheduled fleet movements, and specific attack plans. Constantly vigilant and precise in carrying out his secret orders, he moved his undersea flotilla forward despite savage opposition and established a line of submarines to southeastward of the main Japanese stronghold at Truk. Cool and undaunted as the submarine, rocked and battered by Japanese depth charges, sustained terrific battle damage and sank to an excessive depth, he authorized the Sculpin to surface and engage the enemy in a gunfight, thereby providing an opportunity for the crew to abandon ship. Determined to sacrifice himself rather than risk capture and subsequent danger of revealing plans under Japanese torture or use of drugs, Cromwell stoically remained aboard the mortally wounded vessel as she plunged to her death. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Hey, we're back here on Veterans Radio, and today we've all been talking all about entrepreneurs. Our first guest, John Calavi, another helicopter pilot, but when he got out, he worked for Merrill Lynch for years and was very successful, and he's continued offering opportunities to veterans ever since he got out of the service and so forth. And you just heard Jim doing a little spiel with PuroClean about their franchise opportunities for entrepreneurs, and joining me right now on the line are some more entrepreneurs, and I'm going to introduce you to Drew and Sarah Kellerman, and they are with the Heritage Distilling Company, and they have just come out with a salute, Service to America Salute War Dogs Edition. So let me bring them on here right away. It's another helicopter pilot, so if I start laughing again, folks, I apologize. It's just too much talking to rotor heads. I love it. So Sarah, Andrew, Sarah first, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. True pleasure to be on the show. And thank you so much for all that you are doing for veterans and veterans causes. It's a true privilege to be asked. Thank you for your interest in the distillery. And, sir, especially being a former instructor at Fort Rucker, Alabama, those are memories that are near and dear to my heart. And so reading through your bio was very fun for me. And it's just a pleasure to talk with you. And I thank you sincerely for your service.
Thank you. And to remind our audience, you also flew helicopters.
I did. I was lucky enough to be assigned UH-60 Blackhawks, and I flew that at Schofield Barracks on the beautiful island of Oahu for about 4 years.
Aww.
Transitioned. I know it was tough duty, but someone had to do it, right? And then transitioned over to the EH-60 platform and finished my career over at Fort Huachuca in Arizona.
Okay. And husband, Drew. Drew, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And tell me a little bit about your background. I know that both of you met each other as second lieutenants at University of Colorado, the ROTC program.
Yeah, we were both commissioned out of the ROTC program, met there as cadets in training. We proceeded then into active duty. Both of us were able to go honored of being regular Army commissions. And so we I served in the infantry, light infantry with 27th Infantry Wolfhounds and at the 25th Infantry Division Light in Schofield. And as part of the Army Married Couples Program, that allowed Sarah to get out of a forced deployment to Korea to come join me in Hawaii. Her fellow pilots weren't real happy about that, but but we both, yeah, we ended up both at the 25th Infantry. She was with the Assault Battalion, and I was with the infantry company, and we trained together all the time, actually, which was a lot of fun. My guys loved it. They knew that if we ever really got in trouble, you know, we had our unit was going to get pulled out because we had a pilot who was really
You were newly motivated or newly married, and I was motivated to come get him wherever he was at. So
that's right. Yeah.
We were on the airfield there. Yeah.
I think that's great. That's great. So let me get into this thing about this Heritage Distilling Company. Who would like to tell me the history of this?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah, please.
Dale, I know we've got limited time here, so we'll make it rather brief, but we have a president and CEO who are also a married couple, Jennifer and Justin Stiefel. And I met Jennifer on a field trip when our boys were in the first grade. Our sons are about to turn 21 this year, so it's been a very long and fruitful friendship. And as friendships grow, the moms enjoy each other's company, the kids get along, the next step is to see if the husbands get along, right? So we were hadn't known them for very long, had them over to the house for dinner. A beautiful spring night in the Pacific Northwest, and we were deep in our cups, the whiskey and the cigars were flowing, and Justin held his glass up to the night sky and said, "This is great whiskey, but we can do it better." We had no idea what he was talking about, but Washington State was just about to allow the rule of change for that craft distilleries could be allowed and legal in Washington State, and so I said, if we're going to do this, we need to get ahead of the game and you know, get ahead of the ball game and beat everybody else to the punch. So we were fascinated by the idea, weren't quite sure if he was serious or not. And the next morning when the haze of the previous night wore off, so to speak, we had a multiple page business plan in our inboxes. And Drew and I looked at each other and we said, my goodness, these people were serious. And we learned rather quickly that the Stiefels are people of action. And a lot of people talk about starting their own business or pursuing the American dream. These are people of action. And we thought, you know, what a fantastic entrepreneurial idea. Let's hitch our cart to their wagon, if you will. And 13 years later, here we are. We're the most awarded craft distillery in North America for the last decade. So we're really proud of not only having survived COVID and being on the other side of that fence. A lot of small companies didn't make it, but we persevered. It's good to be on the other side of that fence. And we're just proud of the quality that we're producing and great to be here and share our story. Yeah.
Well, it is. So Drew, how did you feel about this? What were you doing before Heritage?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, Sarah had been doing some odd jobs. She was a stay-at-home mom for many, many years and had re-entered the workforce and was doing some small projects with some local communities, companies and nonprofits. And I had my own firm as an investment advisor, financial planner, doing retirement planning. And so kind of set my own schedule. So when this opportunity came along, you know, being entrepreneurial, we jumped at it. We thought this sounded just fantastic. We had no idea how to get started. And none of the four of us came from the spirits or beverage background in any way. So Justin's a chemical engineer and an attorney. So he's got those two disciplines, which actually are a perfect pairing for the distilling industry. And so we just literally started learning, took some classes, read a bunch of books, bought a still, got some commercial space, raised some money, you know, stroked some big checks, you know, a big gulp. It really was a small startup, you know, community supported, community driven. We decided to call ourselves Heritage Distilling Company because we want to celebrate the heritage of whatever community we're in. And, you know, the tagline is every spirit has a story. We really wanted to create something unique and different, create an experience for our customers, create the highest quality spirits we could, even though we didn't know what we were doing when we started. And then also create the spaces. We have tasting rooms, six of them now, that where it's visually intoxicating, you know, for people to come in and really enjoy and celebrate their community when they come in.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a really wonderful job of you know, not only as entrepreneurs, but, you know, offering up a, you know, a good product for those people who like, you know, like their fine whiskey and bourbon and so forth. And you mentioned that, but tell me about the Service to America salute that you're doing. That's what got my attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, real quick backstory on that. So we're in Gig Harbor, Washington. We're a small little town, but we're in the shadow of Joint Base Lewis-McChord, or Fort Lewis. So Fort Lewis, okay. and the Air Force Base McChord, just down the street from us. And a couple of years after we'd gotten started as a distillery, we had a company sergeant major from First Special Forces Group, which is headquartered out of Fort Lewis. He came walking into our office one day and said, "Hey, I love what you guys do. Love your whiskey. Love to partner up with you and do a tribute whiskey to the First Special Forces Group that can then, a portion of the proceeds can support the nonprofits that support our unit." And at the time, 2014, operational tempo was incredible. You know, the deployment schedule was crazy. There was lots and lots of opportunity, unfortunately, to support Gold Star families at the time and the other nonprofits. So we jumped at that chance, and it was just a fantastic opportunity for Sarah and I, as veterans who hadn't really been connected to the military community, to jump back in and be a part of something that was really meaningful and support First Group. And they really adopted us as kind of a, you know, one of the companies that support them, and just really fantastic. So we got started, and with that, we've raised about $150,000 over the last 8 years for them. But that led to a lot of folks saying, "Hey, what about us? It's nice you guys are supporting First Special Forces Group." So this past year, about a year ago now, this month, we launched our Salute Series, which is a much broader, larger, very top shelf whiskey fundraising project that has both our special operations salute side of it and the Service to America salute side of it, using our highest quality whiskeys to basically, it's whiskey that honors the worthy. It's whiskey designed to honor and celebrate different communities of folks that are willing to put their lives on the line for us. And then raise a bunch of money for the nonprofits that directly support them and their families.
Okay. I'm running out of time here, so I got to make sure that I get you in here. So the latest new one is called Service to America Salute War Dogs Edition. So Sarah, why War Dogs? I got 2 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, it's a little known fact to a lot of people out there that War Dogs have saved, the current statistic is about 40,000 soldiers since World War II era. And we've been partnering with fantastic nonprofits who, their mission is to treat those war dogs like the veterans that they should be treated post-service, caring for them, paying for health care needs, that sort of thing. It's a very much overlooked segment of the population. They're four-legged warriors, quite frankly. And in Vietnam, I'm sure you're well aware, there are war dogs there, and they were left behind. And, you know, we've talked to some of those folks, and they still can't get through a sentence without breaking down talking about, you know, their war dogs.
Yeah, when they talk about their dogs.
We were really impassioned to start this. Our technical advisor, Rick Hogg, is a almost 30-year U.S. Army Special Forces veteran. He had a war dog named Duco. His paw's on the label. It's 98.6 proof to honor the temperature of the human body for all the lives saved. 5 years age, 35 years in dog years, which we were pleased that the federal government let us put that on the label. So we just want to honor that very special population.
Okay, so for people who want to find out more, they go to Heritage.
www.saluteseries.com.
All right, saluteseries.com, and if it's legal, you will send it to them.
That's right. We ship direct to 45 states across the country, and so appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, Dale, and all your support.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you. I'm sorry to make this short, but we are coming up to our regular, this week it's going to be America the Beautiful. And it's going to be Alan Jackson's version. So next week is our benefits program. I encourage everybody to tune in next Sunday to find out what's going on. Till then, you are dismissed.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious sky. For amber waves of green.
above the fruity plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crowned thy good with brotherhood from sin to shine. From sea to shine.